No, we won't put you through that. Well, good morning. It's good to be here. Now, I'm not going to actually read a passage of Scripture this morning, but I am going to reference one. So if you want to look it up, fine, and if not, I'm going to give you a bit of a rundown anyway. It's a story you all know. It comes from Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 34. It's the story of Jesus walking on water. Well, Peter walks on water too, but we'll get to that. So Jesus has just fed a whole pile of people with fish and bread. And he tells the disciples, get in the boat and go to the other side of the lake. And while they are doing that, Jesus goes up on a mountainside to pray. And meanwhile, in the middle of the night, the boat's still crossing the lake. Obviously not a speedboat. And a storm comes up and a wind comes up. And, you know, the disciples are sort of obviously getting a bit concerned. And all of a sudden, they look across the water and they see a figure in white walking across the water towards them. Now, this is Galilee, 1st century AD. But when I read this bit, I always think, man, these bunch of people must be Thais. Because Thai people believe in ghosts and spirits. Every single Thai sees ghosts and spirits, believes in them. And when the disciples see Jesus walking across the water, well, they don't know it's Jesus, it's just a white figure. They go, oh, it's a ghost. That's very Thai. And of course, it's Jesus. Well, Peter looks out, and we all know Peter, he sort of tends to act before he thinks. I can do with that a bit sometimes. And so there he goes, he sort of looks out, and he says, Jesus, if it's you, call me out, Lord. And Jesus says, come. So Peter steps out of the boat onto the water. Now, I'm a Kiwi, and I'm an Aucklander, and there's plenty of beaches around Auckland, and you know what? Little confession, I can't swim. So if it was me, I'd be stepping out and thinking, man, that's deep. I wonder if there's any sharks down there. So Peter steps out and starts to walk towards Jesus. And as he does, he suddenly notices something. Well, presumably that gravity has not kicked in, but anyway. He steps out and he's like, oh dear, there's a storm. There's clouds, there's waves, it's deep. And as he starts to look at those things, he starts to sink. And he calls out, Lord, save me. And Jesus, of course, being Jesus, pulls him out. Oh, ye of little faith, he says. Takes him back to the boat. The storm quietens down. The disciples worship Jesus and they carry on their way. Many times people have said to Ange and I, you guys stepped out of the boat 10 years ago when you went to Thailand. And I'd probably agree with that. If you're going to call the boat the comfort and security of the church, of a church body, going off to a foreign land like we've done and like Vince has done is actually pretty scary and pretty challenging. It doesn't make us better than anyone else. Let's be really clear about that. You see, when you read that passage, the first verse says that Jesus told the disciples to get in the boat and go to the other side. And that's exactly what 11 of them did. They were obeying their master's command. It was Peter, for whatever reason, who decided to bail out of the boat. Well, I was here last year, as you know, and so I want you to just take that scriptural passage and just put it to one side, but I want you to hold it there, because we're going to come back to it. We're going to come round to it again. Well, you see, now, I have a PowerPoint. I don't know if it's up and going, but here we are. Just to give you a bit of a brief rundown again, there's our family, including Andre and Gabrielle, and we first went to Thailand 10 years ago this July, and we opened our home for children in June 2008. Next slide, please. That's our vision statement and our mission statement and vision that we actually wrote before we even started to find children. We had to put something in context because mission can be very airy-fairy. What is mission? And in our case, this is what we were called to do. And so we wrote it down. And the really strange thing is today, the last sentence, able to financially support themselves, is something we wrote not realizing that actually that's going to be a big part of our future. And it's only just starting to become something really relevant to us. Next slide, please. These are our theme verses. The first verse God gave me before we even started this, and you'll notice it starts, can plunder be taken from warriors or captives be rescued from the fierce? Before I even read the next few lines, I knew instantly that the plunder and the captives was referring to the children that we were going to take in. And then you get to the bottom and there it says, I will contend with those who contend with you, and your children I will save. It's about the children. The next verse is where we get our name from, Freedom Family Home. If the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. And then further on, John 10:10, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And that's the next part of our journey. We want fullness of life for our children, and they'll never have that without an education and ID. And those are the things that we're struggling with right now. Next slide, please. Earlier this year, the Bangkok Post, which is the main English language newspaper in Thailand, had a piece written by a Thai woman talking about the Hill Tribe folk and why they don't have ID and why they don't have any future. And this is an interesting piece because it's very rare that you get a Thai academic saying something like this. And you'll see if you want to read it there, it's talking about why kids like ours exist. Because they have no rights. They're not considered to be human beings. They can't leave their home districts. I know of people who have been born in a village where their parents were born, where their grandparents were born, where their great-grandparents were born, and they can't go 5 kilometres from that village their whole lives. If they do, they get arrested. And that's happened to some of our children because of lack of ID, lack of rights. So that's something that we've got to fight for. Next slide, please. Now, most of you know our children. Next slide. So the first picture is when we took Ami in, and the next one is in March this year, which is pretty current. I came here in April, so it's close as. Ami's just started the second year of high school just last week with Superporn and Sudarat. Don't know how she's getting on, but we'll find out when I get back. Next slide. And there is Wee Chai. He's just started high school. He's presently age 12. We're in the process of trying to find him ID. I've talked about that before. I'm not going to go into specifics because sometimes we get dead ends and it's like we just go cycling again, round and round. Next slide, please. We have Chidar. Chidar is now 11. We first met her when she was 4. She still has emotional difficulties from her past life, the abuse that she suffered as a very small baby. But she's really coming along and she loves Jesus. And you often see her walking around. She likes to help Angel with chickens. That's why she's nicknamed Chicken. And she's walking around and she's helping Angel with chickens and she'll be singing to Jesus. Next slide. Now, Sutat. Sutat is my biggest challenge. Well, one of my biggest challenges. I wish I could give you a good report after last year, but I'm afraid he's still in a place where we don't know whether he's heading towards salvation or destruction. And it could easily be either. At the moment, he's just gone back to school, and within a few days, he had gone to a teacher's desk and stolen stuff, which Angela had to return, and a bit embarrassed. But that's where he's at. Next one. Here is Ekachai. He's a bit like Sutat. Some of you who read our newsletter will have read about him going to Bangkok earlier this year to have a brain scan, and the psychologist said we're going to give him an IQ test. It takes about 3 hours. Well, he came out in about an hour, grinning from ear to ear because he thought, I'm cool, I only took an hour. And she said, well, it was because he couldn't even complete more than half of the assessment. So he's got a very low IQ, but that does not mean that he can't have a normal life. He's just challenged and challenging. Next slide, please. This is Sudarat. Now, this is the girl that you as a church raised over $1,000 for and enabled her to have hearing aids. So she's gone from 3 years ago living in a bamboo hut with no electricity, no running water, no toilet. Toilet was the bush with a leaf. And now she's first in her class. So of about 30 students, she's number one. So she's really studious, and I know that those hearing aids that you guys help supply have opened up her horizons. And, you know, she's a neat girl. Last night, I spoke to the kids on Skype, and afterwards I saw she'd written in Thai on Facebook. She had a Sudarat is feeling happy with a happy face. And then in Thai she'd written, I'm really missing Dad. So that touched my heart. Next slide. That's her younger sister, Superporn. I got hassled at a AOG church the other week. A guy came up and says, why are you naming your daughter Superporn? That's really rude. And I said, okay, we're talking Thai language. And in Thai, porn means blessing. Out of my 120 students, I'd say at least 20 of the girls have porn in there somewhere. But it's not as you think. She's doing really well as well. And while I was on Skype last night, obviously the kids were gathered round and Angela was in the background. And I saw Superporn suddenly reach out and grab Angela and give her a huge hug. And she just clung and clung and clung. She's very huggy. Next slide. Banadar. Banadar's also doing well in school. And she's really excited this year because we had Ekachai held back a year. And of course, Vince, when he came over, was going to school with Sutat and Ekachai, and Banadar's in the same class. So Banadar would come home every day very weary because Sutat and Ekachai fight from like cats and dogs from the minute they wake up to the minute they go to bed. So both Vince and Banada would come home sort of half exhausted. Next slide, please. And there's our baby. Surachai, otherwise known as Spider-Man. He has a Spider-Man suit that he'll wear for 3 days in a row until it's like, come on, son. You're starting to get a bit high. It's time to change. He doesn't want to. So he's doing really well. He's Banada's younger brother. And next slide, please. And there's the school that I serve at and that Vince has helped dad at. You know, I've got to say this for Vince. Not many people would jump in the deep end like he did. Go to a school that doesn't have any foreigners apart from me, and Vince threw himself in the deep end. A real blessing to the school. Next slide, please. So this is really a Desai One school. It's a private school, but in Thailand, that means it gets no funding from the government. It's a Christian school. Government schools are Buddhist schools. This school has to survive on very little. And to be honest, most of the kids are rat bags. But I love them. So I teach, not because I'm a teacher, because I want to give these kids a sense of hope. Because most of them are going to end up in a pretty bad way. Girls will end up married off at 15, 16, as prostitutes. The guys will end up running drugs because there's no future of them in the mountains. And that's where they end up. And I want to be someone who goes in there and I mentor them and I encourage them. I've been teaching them for 3 years. And I want them to know there's a hope in Jesus. And I'm even changing some of the gender issues they have where boys think they can assault girls on a regular basis. That's starting to change because I'm there. Next slide. There's just some of the school activities. The next one. And feeding people in the mountains. Next one. And that's where we'll hold it for now. Now, leaving your home country and your home comforts and going overseas is challenging. That's been mentioned this morning. Now, this is my little confession time. I'm not a Catholic, Father, I have sinned. But last year when I was here, when I left, you'd think that the longer we were on the field, the easier it would get. And I've got to be honest, no. It's actually getting harder. I don't know why. I can't explain it. But when I left New Zealand last April, I struggled at the airport. It was like, I don't want to go back. I want to stay here where I'm comfortable, where I've got family. My mum's old. She's just had too many strokes. You know, well, that's now. But there was still that sense of, hey, I'm leaving so much. And when I went back, I think I must have got a little resentful. A bit like, you know, Lord, I've served you on the field for 9 years, almost 10 years. I give and give and give. What about me? When do I get a break? When do I get to have time out? And, you know, Vince came over, and I actually feel sad for Vince because I wasn't really there for him like I'd like to have been. Because, you see, when I got back, I got to a place where it was like, I'm done. You know, Sutat Nekachai, they fight literally from the moment they get up till they go to bed. And sometimes Angela will say, let's have 10 minutes, just 10 minutes out from the kids. And we'll go to have 10 minutes. You never get more than about a minute and all hell breaks loose, literally. And it's like, I've got to go. Because you've got Sutat Nekachai assaulting one another or something else going on. And so we never get that. We never even get 10 minutes. And I started to get really down about it. And this is during the time Vince was with us. And one night, I was lying in bed and I was thinking of something Gabrielle had said, our psychologist. She's almost graduated. And she said, if you and Mum ever left, or if something happened to you, there'd be no hope for these kids. She said, one or two of them might survive. But the reality is, for most of them, their lives will be over, in effect. So that's a huge burden to carry. And so one night I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking, I've got no way out. And I came up with a brilliant plan. You know those brilliant thoughts you have in the middle of the night that you think, man, I could change the world. Well, I could change my world with this one. And so I had a great thought. I can't step down, I can't walk away. But I'm really done. I said, Lord, I've got a great idea. I said, all you have to do is take me out. Now, we're not talking about take me out to dinner, okay? We're talking more 007, you know, silencer, take me out. I said, all you've got to do is take me out tonight, and in the morning, they'll find me in bed. I'll have carked it. But I've gone to be with the Lord. I'll be strumming my little harp up in heaven, and I won't have Sutat Ekachai every 2 seconds. It'll be great. And I will have, you know, people will say, look at Danny, served the Lord, you know, with all his heart, and he died with his boots on. Good on him. It's a win-win. Now, you can sort of guess that God didn't honour my prayer. Isn't it good that sometimes God doesn't honour some of our more stupid prayers? In my case, really stupid prayers. So I woke up in the morning. I was still there. Well, unless I was a zombie. And I realised, oh my goodness. And I said, Lord, I'm sorry. I had no right to ask you that. And I realized that I had a problem. You see, going back to the story of Peter, you can't walk on water, can you? Has anyone tried it? Anyone succeeded? But in Jesus, he could. But when he started looking at the wind and the waves and the storm and all those other things, when he took his focus away from Jesus, he started to sink. And I realized that what I'd been doing over a period of years was I was so surrounded by all this crap, excuse me, but that's what it is, that I was getting to the point where it was like, I've got this, I've got that, no ID, you know, Thai government's full of corruption, you know, troubles with the kids, all those things, the humidity, the heat, you know, blah, 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 carry on, carry on, carry on. And I was looking at those things more and more. And as they grew bigger, somehow Jesus seemed to get smaller. And as Jesus started to shrink, he didn't really shrink, he's still exactly who he's always claimed to be, the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. But as my focus got taken off Jesus and onto my problems, I started to sink. And so that night was a good night for me, even though I asked a pretty stupid thing, because it made me realize I need to change. Because I can't change my circumstances. We still have no ID for 6 kids. Suthat Negachai is still hammering tongs every day. And Suthat's stealing left, right and center, even from church. But I've changed. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2 say, therefore, brethren, in view of God's mercy, offer your body as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by a renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and prove what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. And you know, I needed that. I needed a transformation of my mind. Not a lobotomy, not a brain transplant, but a transformation of my mind. And when I did that, when I put my eyes back on Jesus, it hasn't necessarily changed some of those things I've just briefly spoken about, but it's changed something in me. And I believe that what's coming next would never have happened if I had not had a change in my attitude. You know, there's a saying, if you want to change your altitude, change your attitude. And I've just gone through that transformation. I'm not saying I'm all the way there. We're a work in progress, every one of us. So you see, this year was an interesting year, our 10th year in Thailand. But more than that, we've had a 7-year rental contract with a very rich Thai Buddhist. And in Thailand, landlords do nothing for you. You have to do all the maintenance as well as pay rent. And I've been resentful of the fact that for 7 years we've been giving out money. In fact, I worked it out the other day. We've given out $130,000 New Zealand dollars in rent over 7 years to a rich Thai Buddhist. So money from the kingdom of God has been going into the kingdom of Satan. And so this year when we knew that our rental contract was expiring this November the 10th, and our landlord told us last year, I will not renew it, I want you out. Could have something to do with our dog eating a sacrificial chicken on the spirit house, but anyway, we won't go there. Dogs will be dogs. So he said, we've got to leave. And so we started looking, and we were concerned. Number one, in 7 years, rentals have gone up considerably. And we're paying about $1,100 New Zealand a month now, and we were thinking it could double or triple, and we couldn't sustain that. We live by faith, but that's a huge increase. So that was a concern. We have 9 children who, for security reasons, all need their own bedrooms. So we needed like a 10-bedroom home, and they don't exist. The one we got was the only one we ever found. And then we're about to get registered with the Thai government, and that brings a whole lot of rules and regulations we've got to follow. So we were in a bit of a perfect storm where all these things came together, and we've been looking and looking and looking and could find nothing. And I was leaving for New Zealand on Thursday, April 16th. So about 2 weeks before, we got a new brochure printed. We haven't had one for a number of years. And they're out in the foyer if you want one, take one afterwards. So we got a new brochure printed, and in the brochure, we mentioned New Home Project 2015. And we mentioned our need for either a rental or to purchase a property. And we had to put a price in here. Now, we've been looking for 6, 7, 8 months and found absolutely nothing. Nothing whatsoever, not to rent or to buy. And so as we wrote this in here, I was typing, Angela was at my shoulder, I put in, we need 4 million Thai baht. Now that's, as I looked this morning, today's standard is it's $163,000 to buy a property. And as I wrote that, Angela said to me, what are you putting that figure for? You know that's not enough. That won't even get us a hovel on a small piece of land. And I said, I know. Do you know why I put that price in there? So here's a souvenir of my lack of faith. Because we have lived by faith for 8 years, and I totally trust God to provide my daily needs. But a lump sum of money just blew my mind, and I couldn't conceive anything higher than that. So I put in the equivalent of New Zealand, 166, not because it's what we needed, because that's as far as my faith stretched. So Angela's looking at me like, you spiritual wimp, but she's a nice woman, and she didn't say much. So I, to appease her, I added a minimum of. She still gave me a dirty look. So this was printed and in stone. You can't change it. There it is. Testimony of my lack of faith. So, we get to the Sunday before I'm due to fly out. Nothing. Got a brochure, but nothing. And that Sunday we met a couple who have lived in Chiang Mai for a long time, been missionaries in the Philippines or in Thailand for over 60 years. They're named Fritz and Gerda. They're Dutch of origin. He's 86 years old. They're both in poor health. And they own a property. And they met us that Sunday. They'd just arrived in Thailand the day before, or a day or 2 days before. And after church, he came and sat with me. He couldn't possibly know our circumstances. And he said to me, oh, my son died in America last year in a landslide. We'd gone back to America. He said, we've come back because we've had a British guy in our property for I don't know how long, but for 8 months the man had not paid rent. The electricity's cut off. The guy actually cut the telephone line. And he ransacked the place and sold most of the fittings and furniture for his air tickets back to Britain. And he fled. A Christian pastor. So they'd come back with a property that was completely messed up. They're in debt. They're in trouble. And as he's telling me this, I'm going, wow, we've been looking for a property and can't find anything. And they've got a property that they've just come back to fix up. So I said, hey, you don't know our circumstances. I explained, we've got to leave in November. We've got nowhere to go. I said, can we come and see you this week? I'm flying out to New Zealand on Thursday. So that was a Sunday. On the Tuesday, we went and looked at the property. And it's twice the size of the property we now own. It's an acre or a third of a hectare. It's got a fish farm and a bakery on it. And as someone said to me the other week, loaves and fishes. It's 11.3 kilometres from school, where right now we're 25 kilometres from school. It's rural. It's everything we could want. And we sat with them and I said, you know, that I thought they were going to rent it to us. And he gave me a rental price. And I said, and he said to me, but we're willing to sell it to you. So I said, can you give me a price? Now, Angela's done a lot of looking online, and having looked at the property, I knew it was worth about 8 to 10 million baht. So let's say 300,000 New Zealand plus. And he sat there for a minute, and he said, 4 million baht. Something that I'd already written in my lack of faith. Isn't God amazing? That sometimes when we just don't quite have it, faith-wise, God says, I want to bless you here. Well, Dan, if you can't come up to where I need you to be, I'll just come down to where you are. What a blessing. So we can hit the next slide. This is the property. And next slide. There it is. And next one. And next one. So we made an agreement the day before I flew out to rent it from November with the option, our preferred option B, to buy. You know, that whole Peter thing about being afraid. I'm a little afraid right now, to be honest. Because only last week, a man from Bangkok who runs a children's home went up to Fritz and Gerda's house in Chiang Mai and said to them, I want to buy your property. He said, I've looked all over Chiang Mai. There is nothing available in Chiang Mai that would do for a children's home except your property. The only place in Chiang Mai. And all we've got at the moment is a verbal agreement. And I mean, maybe this guy's got the money that we don't yet have. So, you know, I'm feeling challenged right now. But again, because of my change in attitude, I'm not going to look at the storm. Because the truth is, if that man undercuts us, we're out in the street in November. And that probably means we have to come home and got to put the kids back to wherever they came from. And that's unthinkable. So I'm going to believe by faith that God has prepared a place for us. That's what he told me he'd do. And I believe this is the property. So when I go back in a week and a half, I'll be going out to Fritz and Gerda's place and I'll be sitting with them and I'll be saying this to them. You made a verbal agreement with us. It's not set in stone. And maybe this other guy has more money than us. But I'm going to say to them, if he doesn't get the property, he's still got his kids and a home. But if we don't get the property, we're out in the street. And I'll just appeal to them and say, I'm going to ask you to honour that verbal agreement. We'll see what happens. But I'm going to trust in the Lord for that. So I'm going to finish by bringing it back to this morning. There was talk about what mission is. And you know, sometimes I meet people and say, oh, I want to go to the mission field. And I'll say, cool, where do you want to go? And they'll tell me a country. And then I'll say, what are you doing right now? And they'll say, nothing. And you know, the reality is, it can be exciting and challenging and all sorts of things to go to a foreign mission field, but we can't all go. That's the reality. We can't all hop on a plane and go. For Ange and I to be there, it takes people like you to support us for us to even do what we do. So the reality is only some can go. Only some can get out of the boat. One got out, 11 stayed in. But it doesn't mean that the people who don't go don't have a calling. Because we're all called to share the good news of Jesus Christ. And you know, right outside this door, you actually have a community. And I'm not here to put any of you down. I don't even know what you're doing or not doing. I'm simply challenging you and encouraging you and exhorting you. You know, I came here for John Cowan the other night. What was it called? Someone helped me? Someone was here? Parents? Huh? Okay. And when I left, I'm driving just around the corner here, and I had two prostitutes try to wave me down. You know? Right outside the door of this church, there are people in need. There are people who are lost. So, you know, I'm not here to tell you anything except this. What is God putting in your hearts? What is God calling you to? What are the challenges right immediately around this building that we, and I say we because right today I'm here with you, what can we do as a church for those that are broken and lost and hurting? Because yeah, they're broken and they're lost and hurting in Thailand and many other places. But I'm sure there's people right outside this door that are broken, lost and hurting. So I just want to encourage and challenge you on that. As I say, I'm nobody to tell you what to do. But I just want to encourage you to look to Jesus. And if you're feeling a little bit like I was, a little discouraged, maybe you've got some personal challenges, maybe you've got things going on in your own families or in your work life or whatever, sickness, ill health, look to Jesus. It doesn't necessarily mean your circumstances will change, but something changes in you, and something's changed in me, and I'm going back to Thailand in 10 days to see this vision unfold. There's challenges, lots of them ahead. I've still got challenges with some of my kids, but I'm going back with a new heart. I'm going back with a new sense of purpose. I'm going back actually excited to return and see what God has. So, bless you all. May the Lord bless and keep you. Thank you.